Welcome to this podcast by the Caboolture Gospel Church. For more information about us, head to www.caboolturechurch.com.au.
Heavenly Father, we thank you for the glorious presence in this place. We thank you for your powerful and mighty presence here tonight, God. Thank you that your word is powerful, it's alive. It is so powerful that it pierces through souls and spirits. Thank you that your word is so powerful it brings dry bones to life. You are the way, the truth, and the life. You are the resurrection and life. You're the Prince of Peace. You're the lily of the valleys, God. And I pray that tonight you speak the word through me. I feel weak. But give me the strength, I pray, God. God, I pray for your presence tonight, in Jesus' name. I got a bit of a cough going. So first, sorry if it irritates you. It's irritating me, so. cheers, mate. Please remind me. So for the first time this morning, I did ushering at the front in my life. I wasn't sure about it. I said to Clyde, mate, I'm not sure about this. And Clyde said to me, you're doing a good job, Josh. So I had no choice but smile. I thought to myself, maybe I should do more of this ushering, you know. It will help me deal with my smiling issues. I should do more of this. First of all, I want to thank you to all those who prayed for my wife Krupa's visa to come through, and it came through last week. God is still faithful. He hasn't let me down, which is great. So 2 weeks ago, Ben sent me a message saying, Josh, can you share the word this Sunday night? And I said, yeah, sure. I would love to. And he said to me, it's freestyle, and that means you could choose whatever topic you like. And I said, that's good. So I had a real good think about what I could share with you tonight. And this is what I came up with, Scott, if you don't mind. God will bring you through it. The storms, the trials, the tribulations we face, God will bring you through it. And the reason why I decided to choose this topic is because I'm going through a storm myself in this present time. And I want to share with you how God is bringing me through that storm. Anybody here who hasn't been through a storm? Nobody, that's good. Because you don't know what you're missing out on. It's the best thing. Now, I used to have this wrong idea that all the non-Christians got the good life. They're happy, you know, it's always smiling and life is good for them. Why do we face all this? And as I journeyed through Christ, I realized that's very wrong. The more people I meet on a day-to-day basis, I realize that's very wrong. I was talking to talking to a friend of mine at work. So I work at the Mater Hospital. And I work night shift 11 till 6:30, and I'm the only person from that time, 11 to 6:30. So from 11 o'clock, somebody has to bring the work to me. So there is a wardy who brings the specimens to me. So I some nights I get really bored, and the only person I can talk to is these wardies. And this young guy, 21 years old, Mike his name, and I like to spark a conversation and it just takes off, goes somewhere, you know. And I started with, you know, whether he believed in creation, and ended up in a one-hour conversation. He's a very happy guy, very energetic. He used to work in a pub as a bartender. Very fast, he said. His boss still keeps ringing him to come back to the pub because he was that fast. And anyway, he said he had enough of the bar life, and here he is, a wardy at the Mater Hospital. Anyway, long story short, I was interested in this guy. I dug deep into him, and he said to me his mother was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis when he was 10 years old, and it really crushed him so much. And she's an absolute vegetable in bed, doesn't recognize people, she doesn't even know she has a son. And he was struggling when he was speaking to me. And he said, "Josh, how could a God that you serve could do such a thing to me?" And I was so happy he came to that point, because that's where I wanted him to go, so I could share what I believed in. I sparked a conversation, and I thought, this is where I want you to come. And I was able to share my faith. And he said his mom lives in some care facility, and he said, "I hate going down that corridor to see my mom where she is." And he said, "It really wears me down. I don't like going to see my mom, you know." A lot of bitterness he carries in his mind, which you could never see in the outward. So I said to him, he said many times in his life he questioned God, questioned about his existence. And he said three times he had car accidents. And the last car accident was a month and a half ago. He finished work at the Mater. He was driving to Cleveland, and head-on collision. Car was absolutely written off, absolute junk, wouldn't even sell it to scrap metal. He didn't even have a bruise. There was three police cars came to the Mater with him. He was absolutely fine. And I thought, "You've been questioning about God's existence many times." I said, "God's interested in you, my friend." And I said, "God's saving you so that one day you realize he's alive, that he's true. It's not by accident that you are here tonight." And I said, "If you ever come to a point in life where you want to question his existence again," and I said, "you lay your hands on your mom," and I said, "you pray, God, if this Josh guy, the God he talks about, if you are for real, you heal my mom." And I said, "I'll put my life online for this." I said, "you tell me what happens." That was the only thing I could say. And I believe God's going to do it. He has to. And I wrestle with that. So every single soul that you meet out there is facing a storm that you have no idea about, whether it's relationship, whether it is depression, whether it is, I don't know, sickness, prostitution. You have no idea. We can't come to a conclusion of anybody. So tonight I want to share a little testimony about my life, because it's freestyle and I thought this is the best opportunity. I grew up in India, and I finished school in 2003, and I wanted to become a doctor. And my parents and my grandparents wanted me to become a doctor because my dad runs his own hospital. So I was 18 years old when I finished school, and I applied at many, many, many medical schools. I don't even have any numbers. But everything looks very promising, and something would come up in the very last minute, and I miss out. God shuts that door right in front of me. And my grandfather and I were very close. You know, we were quite good friends, especially 2 to 3 years before he passed away. So we were very close. We used to travel together for quite a long time to many states in India in relation to my medical school admission. So we would travel 12 hours, 14 hours on a train. We would stay in a hotel. You know, he would talk to me about many things about his life. He's someone I looked up to. He was a very successful man, but he was a servant of God. And he was very educated, very influential person. He went to US in 1957 and he did his doctorate in literature. And he ran his own college. And there are members of the parliament and ministers in Kerala, the state I come from, who are taught by my grandfather. And I never knew this guy was this influential until the funeral day. So my grandfather used his influence and he involved these political figures to get me a medical school admission. See, over there, if you're a political figure, you had so much power. You could ring up a college and say, well, this is my candidate. I want him to get into the school. Deal with the papers. It's done. Even with those political figures, I could not get in. God kept shutting the door. And I was frustrated. I lost 2 years after school. 2 years is a big deal in India, you know. My friends that I went to school with looked down on me. When they were studying, going to uni, over there, education is a big thing. If you're not educated, the society will look down on you. It's a very different culture there. So my friends looked down on me. Here I am, hopeless, just mucking around. I wasn't getting anywhere in life. And in 2005, him and I, my grandfather and I, made a trip to Bangalore, which is still a southern state of India. And it's a 12-hour train trip. So we took the train. And the reason why we went there was this college, which is about 300 kilometers from the city of Bangalore. And the college was very keen on me. They said, we like to take this guy. Just come along, attend the interview, and you're all set. So him and I, he was 78 years old at that time, my grandfather. We took the journey. And we got there a weekend, and we drove to this college. We stayed there overnight on a Tuesday. Everything is looking good. And Wednesday morning, we woke up. We were in the same room, two beds. He woke up and he said to me, I had a very unpleasant dream last night. And I said to him, what did you see? He didn't tell me. He wouldn't tell me. I asked him a few times during that day. He still wouldn't tell me. Anyway, we went to the college on a Wednesday. They said to me, you're all good. Your name is on the list. You come and pay the first semester fees on Saturday and you're good to go. And I'll give you the timetable for the class. Everything is looking fine. We came back to the hotel room Wednesday afternoon and we drove back to the city of Bangalore, 300 kilometers. And I'm thinking, happy days. Finally, God's opening a door. This college is looking good. So why did you make me suffer for two years for this? And Wednesday night, we got back to Bangalore. Thursday morning, my grandfather got really sick. So remember, Saturday is the day we have to give the money. Money is ready. First semester, I'm in. Thursday morning, he got really sick. He was an asthmatic patient. It was very cold weather and he had a cold. He was struggling to breathe. So I took him to the hospital Wednesday night, well, about 6:30 in the afternoon. And they treated him, they gave him nebulization, and he was looking all right. And by about 9:30, I went to the place where we were living, where we were staying, to get some dinner, and dinner for him as well. And as soon as I walked into the house we were staying, he's still in the hospital. I received this call saying, you better come back. And that didn't sound good. And I knew there was something not right. And I went straight back to the hospital. And I realized he was taken to the ICU. And they said to me, your grandfather went to the toilet and he collapsed in the toilet because he had a cerebral hemorrhage. He had a cerebral hemorrhage. And I stormed into the ICU. I didn't worry about the policies of the hospital. I stormed straight in. I remember the nurses trying to stop me. You can't go in. I still went in. And I remember opening that door of the ICU. I still remember that scene that I saw. It's still crystal clear to me. And I saw an unconscious grandfather lying on this bed. He was unconscious, but he's breathing. He was taking real deep, deep breaths. And I could see his ribs. That's how deep he was taking the breaths. I was watching him from that door. It was pretty hard to watch. And the nurses are still trying to get me out. And I remember thinking at that time, I wish I can go in and give him a hug. I remember thinking, can I go and tell him, thank you for coming, you know? Thank you for coming, making this journey to Bangalore. It was hard for me to see him unconscious, taking that breath. I knew even if I said something, he wouldn't have a clue because he's so gone. He's breathing, but he's not conscious. Anyway, I finally got out of the room. The nurses asked me to go out, which I did, and I waited for a couple of hours outside, and about 2 hours later, I think it was by about midnight, the nurse came out and said, I'm sorry, your grandfather's passed away. And it felt like a big wrecking ball just coming at full force of me, bang, crushed. I felt like a vegetable just crushed. Felt like my world was falling apart. At 4 a.m. Thursday morning, this happened midnight. It's already Thursday now. Thursday morning, 4 a.m. Me and a cousin of mine who lived in Bangalore at that time, we started the journey back to my state, which is a 14-hour road trip on an ambulance with the dead body of my grandfather. Here I am, who is meant to go to this college on a Saturday to be a medical student, something my grandfather was going to see, was going to be proud of, his grandson getting into this college. Here I am Thursday, going back with this dead body. I remember, let me tell you, this was the worst road trip I ever been in. Being in the back of an ambulance staring at a dead body for 14 hours. And I remember many thoughts went through my head, a million miles an hour. I remember looking at my grandfather's dead body and being bitter at myself, being angry at myself. I felt sorry for him because he came for me all the way at 78 years old. And here he is. I remember being angry with God. I was so angry with God. I said to God, you do me a favor, why don't you leave me alone? This is what I get. I said, what have I done to you for you to do this to me? What has he done to you? I was faced with the storm of my life. Heaven remained silent in the midst of my storm. God remained silent for 2 years while I was going through this. But I could not get into the medical school because we had to bring his body back. I said, no more doctor stuff. This is enough. I'll give up. Because 2 years gone, my friends looked down on me. Now my grandfather's dead. This is it. I'm giving it all a miss. While I was bitter at God in the ambulance, just angry with him, I had no idea that God was preparing a table for me here in Australia. While I was angry with God at that time, I had no idea that 11 years later, I would be standing here sharing the goodness of God. While I was angry with God, I had no idea he would take me to a place where my friends are totally jealous of me, of where God has taken me. Let me tell you the truth. There are friends that I went to who wouldn't talk to me because they're jealous of where I am, and that's fine. God honored me. God really honored me. But tonight I want to share something from the scripture, how God's helped me through the storm that I'm going through right now. And I want to go into John chapter 11. And it talks about the death and resurrection of Lazarus. Now Jesus said, at one point, foxes have dens, birds in the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. Now the creator of the universe, the God of everything, has no place on earth where he could call a home, where he could call a house, some place that he could go at night and lay down and rest. He was the outlaw. He had no place. But in John chapter 11, we can see that Jesus had an intimate friendship with Mary, her sister Martha, and their brother Lazarus. Jesus dearly loved them, and it was their house, their home, where Jesus actually felt welcomed. He felt hospitality. He felt like he could go and rest. The friendship was very good that Jesus loved them. And if we go into John chapter 10, towards the end of John chapter 10, we can see that Jesus was near the river of Jordan while he hears the news that Lazarus is sick. He was near the river of Jordan where John the Baptist was performing baptisms. And Mary, Lazarus' sister, send a word to Jesus saying, Lord, the one you love is sick. The one you love is sick. And Jesus responded straight away, this sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory so that God's Son may be glorified through it. This sickness will not end in death. It is for God's glory. Now, as we go on reading this whole story, we can see that in verse 6, it says, yet when he heard about the sickness of Lazarus, he decided to stay where he was for 2 more days. He decided to stay where he was for 2 more days after hearing that Lazarus, his dear friend, the one he loved, was in his sick bed, in his deathbed. Now, Lazarus was someone Jesus really loved, and you would expect when you hear he's sick, Jesus would stop everything what he's doing and rush straight to Lazarus to heal him. Now, here Martha and Mary comes up with this desperate plea for help. They come up with this desperate plea for help for their brother, that Jesus would come and heal their brother And here Jesus does something real strange. He decided to stay where he was for two more days. And now what sort of logic is that? I mean, we wouldn't do that in the natural. If there's someone we loved, you know, we get a call, like my grandfather, you better come. I didn't even have dinner. I went straight back to the hospital. Now, Jesus decided to stay where he was for two more days. Only Jesus would do that. That's the interesting thing. We wouldn't do that. He's a mastermind. His understanding has no measure. His wisdom has no measure. His love has no measure. Now, Jesus demonstrated his love. They want help from Jesus, but he demonstrated his love by delaying his trip. He could go back straight away, but he delayed his trip. He's demonstrating his love by delaying the trip. Now, in the midst of their pain, in the midst of the storm that Mary and Martha are going through, Jesus remained silent for 2 days. And as we go on reading this, it says, after 2 days in Jordan, Jesus finally says, let's go back to Judea. Now, Lazarus stays in Bethany, which is in Judea. Let's go back to Judea. Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep. But I'm going there to wake him up. Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep. Now, at this point, Jesus is saying, Lazarus is not sick anymore, but he's dead. But the disciples did not understand what he was saying. Disciples got confused and they said, well, if he's sleeping, Lord, if he sleeps, he will get better. They thought Jesus was saying Lazarus was taking an afternoon nap. He'd be all right. And then Jesus goes on to say, Lazarus is dead. And for your sake, I am glad I'm not there. I was not there so that you may believe. Lazarus is dead, and for your sake, I am glad I was not there so that you may believe. In other words, Jesus is saying, if I had gone there any earlier, Lazarus would be healed, and the forthcoming miracle or wonder of resurrection would not have occurred. He's saying, for your sake, I delayed this, because whatever you're going to see is going to blow your mind. I am delaying this trip back to Judea to Lazarus so that you can see the resurrection, the wonders of God. You can see the glory of God. What you're about to see is going to strengthen your faith, he says to the disciples. When Jesus arrived, he found that Lazarus has already been dead and he's in the tomb for 4 days. He's been in the tomb for 4 days. Now, as I was studying this, it's a Jewish culture. Well, it is not a Jewish culture now. It was a Jewish culture that when a man dies, his spirit would hover around the tomb for about 4 days. That's what they believed, trying to get back into the body. And after 4 days, the body would decay so much, it would start to disfigure, and the spirit leaves. Now, I'm not sure if that's why Jesus delayed the trip for 4 days. He rocked up on the fourth day. I don't know if Jesus wanted these Jewish people to think Lazarus is dead. And when Jesus asked them to roll the stone away, he was about to perform the great miracle. Mary said, But Lord, something we are all used to. We all complain, but Lord, how about this? But Lord, I'm going through this. But Lord, by this time, there is a bad odor coming out of the tomb. And he's been there in the tomb for 4 days. There is a bad odor coming. Why do you want the tomb to be opened? He's dead. And what's interesting is Jesus' reply. He says, did I not tell you? See, Jesus purposefully delayed the trip to Bethany to perform this miracle. He purposefully delayed the trip to show his love. You might be going through a storm. You might be going through tough times in your life. And you feel like God's delaying everything. He's sleeping. But let me tell you the truth, he's not. You better buckle up because he's going to bring glory. Something is about to happen. You know, you might be asking all these questions in your life. Why God? Because I did, big Tom. I totally put all the blame on him when I went through my grandfather's death. Why, Lord? I do not understand this. I don't understand the way you do things. And it's okay to think like that. It's very natural for us humans to think, why? What have I done to you? You won't understand God, for he's indescribable. You all you got to do is trust in the living God who understands everything. You know, when I go to work, I get in my car, turn the engine on, it takes me to Brisbane and it comes back. The next day, I go to work again. I don't think about whether my car is going to take me to Brisbane, because I know it will. Because yesterday it took me to Brisbane and it brought me back. I trust that piece of machine would take me to Brisbane and back. And why? Because it took me there yesterday without a glitch. And how stupid of me to trust a piece of machine like that. If I could trust my car like that, how dare I not trust the living God who breathed life into me? How dare I not totally trust in the storm that I'm going through? Jesus went through the most violent death you could ever think of, most horrible, cruel death humanity has ever invented. He was in agony, he was in distress, he was caught in the Garden of Gethsemane. It says he was in agony that his sweat was like drops of blood falling to the ground. He took Peter, James, and John separately and he said to them, my soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. And he said to them, pray for me. He prayed to his father, Father, if possible, take this cup from me. But not my will, but yours be done. The heaven remained silent. His Father in heaven remained silent. The angels remained silent. Jesus went and prayed again. My Father. It's very interesting, this the second time he says, my Father. I'm trying to understand the intimacy Father in heaven and Jesus has. His son. His daddy up there. My Father, if it is not possible for this cup to be taken away, unless I drink it, may your will be done. We may never understand the heart of his Father in heaven when his son is going through agony. You know, you know, many of you guys got kids. I don't have a kid, so I probably wouldn't understand that much. If your kid's going through terrible torture, going through a violent death, I don't know how you would take it. Would you be able to watch your kid crying out for help? Would you be able to look at your kid and turn your face away? Jesus prayed the second time, and I bet the Father in heaven felt so heavy. His heart was grieving. He sent an angel straight down to Jesus and he strengthened him. Down to Jesus. He strengthened him, but the cup wasn't removed. The cross was the worst storm Jesus ever faced. It was the most cruel, unbearable storm Jesus faced. But it was the very same rugged cross that he was glorified. Now you might be going through the storm of your life where you feel like this is the end. Remember, this is where you'll be glorified. This is where God will use for him to be glorified. Your storm is an opportunity for God to bring glory. It is not a curse. It is not a bad thing. Of course, it is unpleasant. It is God's opportunity. It is a privilege. It's a blessing. That's the way I see it. And the only way Jesus could be glorified was going through the cross. There was no other way possible. Otherwise, his Father in heaven would have sent, all he needs is one angel to destroy everything. But the cross was the only way for him to be glorified. He had to go through that storm, the glory of Father to be revealed. Now, I was talking to my sister Hannah a couple of weeks ago. I did ask her if I could share this, and she said it's fine. She's not someone who tells stuff very openly, so. But very recently, she was going through a real bad time in her life. Real terrible time. She never told me what it was. I didn't ask. It was wearing her down so much. She was very disappointed. And this very night, she went to bed with a very heavy heart. And on that very same night, God gave her a dream. God spoke to her through a dream that night. And she explained to me what the dream was. She said, God gave her a flashback of all the disappointments that she faced in the past. She said it was like an iPad, you know, you flick through the pictures. It was going back, you know, God showed her all the disappointments that she faced. Then it went swiping forward, what she will face in the future. It wasn't an iPad, but she's saying it was like an iPad. It was flicking through the disappointments. And suddenly it stopped. She saw what she was going to face. She saw what she did face in the past. And the next thing is a book appears in the dream. And on the book, there's so much stuff written on it, and she's not able to read everything because pretty much everything is blurred. She can't read it. But there was three words, there was three words that was highlighted. It was nice and clear. It just popped out, highlighted, bright, right in front of her on the book. Scott, if you could please put up that picture. And it said, respond with time. Not time, time. As you know, time is a herb. God gave her three words out of that book, and it was so highlighted, respond with time. She woke up the next day, totally confused, had no idea what this is supposed to mean. Respond with the herb. Respond with time. So she decided to do a bit of research on it, started to study about time. And what she found is in the ancient Greek Roman culture, time was a sign of courage. In the olden days, in the ancient Greek Roman culture, they put thyme leaves in their drinks to induce bravery. They used, the wives of soldiers and warriors would put thyme leaves on their husband's chest before they went out on the battlefield. So time has so much meaning in the past. And God spoke to her that night saying, respond with time. He spoke to her that night saying, you will have disappointments in the future. You had disappointments in the past. But I want you to respond with courage. It so impacted me. It touched me so much. I went to Bunnings and bought a thyme plant. I did. It's on the patio. Every time I'm going through this, I'm looking at this plant. And she said the next day, she experienced courage like never before. She said there was a supernatural courage. The Holy Spirit gave her courage like never before. She said she pierced through that storm like you wouldn't believe. God gave her so much strength. He said, respond with time. I said to my sister, you know what? I'm jealous of you. I did. I said, I'm jealous of you in a good way. I said, I want God to speak to me like that. And I said, Hannah, do you understand the creator of the universe spoke to you saying, respond with courage, with time? Do you understand he has a hand upon you? Do you realize how much he loves you? Do you understand the depth of his love? That he is coming in your dream and saying, what more do you need? That's what I'm trying to think. What more do you need when he says this? Yeah. He's taken everything into his control. All you got to do is respond with courage. Some of you might be going through a storm right now. It's very, if you're not, God bless you still. Blessed are those who go through the trial. Some of you are going through a bad time in your life. Some of you feel like God is silent. Some of you feel like God's not answering your prayers. God was silent in my life for 2 years. He gave me nothing, but he gave me everything after that. I can stand up here and testify about him. I can stand up here and glorify him because of that storm I went through. I wouldn't be here if I didn't go through that. In the midst of your storm, in the midst of your pain, God's watching over you. He's not sleeping. He's watching over you. The famous story about Jesus going with the disciples across the lake where he calmed the storm. It really fascinates me. He says, let us go over to the other side of the lake. He said, let us go to the other side of the lake. A God who spoke life into things, a God who said, let there be light. When he said, let there be a storm, let there be rain, let there be thunder, he's saying, let us go over to the other side of the lake. He knew there was a storm coming. He knew exactly how the disciples were going to react. He didn't say, why don't you jump on the boat and go? I'll stay here. He said, let us go. I will come with you. Let's ride this storm together. I am with you in this. I just want you to trust me. He's not letting you go over across the other side of the lake. It fascinates me. There's so much to learn from these things. There's one word from the word, and that speaks life. Like Jesus said in the story of Lazarus, the sickness will not end in death. No, it will be. It is for God's glory, so that God's Son be glorified through it. The storm will not end in destruction. The storm that you're going through will not end in you drowning. It is for God's glory, and that God's Son be glorified through it. As I finish, I just want to encourage you, going back to that story again of Lazarus, that Jesus says to Martha, did I not tell you, if you believed, you would see the glory of God? The storm, if you got a storm that's bigger than me, that's tougher than me, then I'm jealous of you. Because I believe the better the storm, the better God's going to come through. The better the glorification. So I want to encourage you tonight, respond with time. God bless.
You have been listening to a podcast by the Caboolture Full Gospel Church. We hope you have enjoyed it. For more information, head to www.caboolturechurch.com.au.